Hello and welcome to the Bravo Outsider Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Midwinter, joined as always by Dylan Ferguson. Dylan, how's it going?
Good. As people with visual can see, I'm back in my usual home and I'm happy about that. Just starting to redecorate a little bit, so hopefully it'll look better in the coming days. I'll try to get some plants in here. I need to figure out how I can invite Tom Schwartz over.
He'll
a couple visits and I'll be fully stocked.
Yeah, maybe you'll get a sweet do not disturb hat too.
Yeah.
Well, we're super excited to have our guest on today. You might know him from Vanderpump Robs. It's Rob Schulte.
Hello. So here's the thing. I think I have that mug, Dylan.
This mug?
Yes. I know. I'm sorry. Visual stuff. Except mine is all different types of dogs.
No way. This is,
yeah.
My friend bought this for me in Japan. It's Snoopy characters.
I got mine at a Japanese shop at Epcot.
No way.
Yes, oh.
This is cool as hell. Bad tagline, by the way.
I'm so sorry.
But I'm so happy that I know somebody else who has a similar bug.
Distracted. Yeah. Here, I'll say my tagline now. You may present it as drama, but all I see is scams.
Oh, there we go.
Seems kind of sinister, that tagline.
Hey, it's been a running theme on my podcast recently. It's just, how many can they jam pack? And by many, I mean many scams just into these seasons.
Well, we got the water on Vanderpump Rules this week, which is seems like a little bit of a scam if we're to trust the divining rod of Katie.
Okay, so
go ahead.
No, I'm dying to talk about the water tasting. Because here's the thing, sorry, Craig, for jumping the gun. I don't think that water tasting is bullshit. Like, I actually think water tasting is a cool thing, and water sommeliers are cool. I think that's real. I'm very critical about a lot of these things, that these woo-woo bullshit activities that these people do on these shows as being completely fake. But I think it's more weird that people act like water doesn't have a flavor than water tasting is weird. I think, you know, it's cool to be into water. Everybody drinks water. So why shouldn't people be more into water tasting? That having been said, this fucking most German man in the world, from the news, according to,
yeah,
to James
I've
Kennedy,
seen on the news.
Who apparently TikTok is the news for James Kennedy.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, where does James Kennedy get his news? That's what I want to know.
Like, saying, like, this is the world's only cuvée water. That means nothing. That is just absolute marketing copy. It means nothing. I'm no sommelier, but, you know, I know enough about wine to know that the word cuvée is, other than like literally meaning that it's been inside a cask, which every wine is, it like has no reglemented definition, and in fact has no definition at all. Like, putting the word cuvée on a wine label is no different from like a box of frozen fish sticks putting the word premium on the packaging.
Like, it's like when Van Leeuwen says they're French ice cream. It's like, okay, so your ice cream has eggs in it. Like, that's custard. Yeah. Like, that's all. It's the same thing. And this dude knows how to talk to this cast, right? Like, he knows what he's doing. And yeah, I'm with you. Like, water does have a taste. You know, Sheena says, that's not tap. And it's like, but also... of course it's not, right? Like, I mean, Dasani tastes different than, you know, LaCroix, but it's not that it's anything special. The one thing I did point out about that scene on my latest episode was that when they were like, so what is this, what makes it like $1,000? And I believe he says, the idea of two springs coming together to make water.
Yeah, that is what he said. Yeah.
And that, yes, that could be a language barrier thing, but I think that is total marketing talk. This is the idea of that.
Yeah. I think he says, like a Bordeaux blend. Okay, so it's like two things in the same bottle is what it's two sources. It's like, and it's just, there isn't like real if it's spring water, like, it could be really good. There's really good spring waters out there. There are great ones. And I'm totally down with the idea of comparing them and developing a palate. I think it's cool that Lala's really into water. I think that's a cool way to be sober, you know, instead of just being like, well, I'm going to try to find the best fake beers and you know, fake whiskeys, which are, you know, it's like when people go vegetarian and all they do is eat like tofu bacon. It's like, well, why aren't you getting into really cool actual vegetarian dishes rather than just imitating poorly versions of meat dishes? But being like, I'm gonna be a water nerd now and get like into all the types of sparkling water, I think that's a cool way to be sober. Having said that, spring water is not like a limited resource. You're not gonna run the spring dry, so obviously that $1,000 price point is marketing. Like, it's not like wine. The wine world is full of bullshit too, but like the laws of supply and demand usually explain the high prices, because you're looking for like a certain vintage, you know, from a certain grape, from a certain place, from a certain year. There's only so many of those that exist. You can fill bottles up from that stream endlessly. Like,
and this dude is totally a 1980s antique salesman, where like, all I know is it's the only bottle in America.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I found a trinket at a garage sale and now I've just made up a story about it. And sells to the person who wants to buy that story.
Yeah.
And that's what
it's like. It's like a hotel saying that it's haunted. Like, it's one of the oldest tricks in the book.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, every and hotel is haunted, which I can say that as a hotel professional. The Vanderbump hotels are all haunted by Ken Todd.
Yeah. Or Jiggy.
Yeah.
Could be Jiggy. Yeah.
Or Rosé, the little horse.
And don't forget about the swan. So many dead animals in
Lisa's life. I will be so disappointed if we don't see Lisa's animal graveyard again this season. Oh, like, we got that shot of it, you know, last season where Ariana is like crying over her dead dog and Lisa calls her like from her animal graveyard. Just like such a like amazing scene. I really hope that we get to see the graveyard again.
I want some Vanderpump Rules fan fiction that merges it with Pet Cemetery. I think that would be incredible. Sometimes dead is better.
So we're going to be starting with Vanderpump Rules, I think, just based think on have. The way this is going.
Yeah.
Let's get a three sentence summary from you, Rob.
Okay, so I'm taking this in the style of how I write my own episode descriptions, so bear with me, folks. I hope you get it. When Anne wants a new boss and Tom wants to eavesdrop, it's not long before the pizza is delivered. Are James and Allie the new Tom and Ariana? Does Schwartz's love for plants outweigh his need to be a father? Who will succumb to the power of the milky water? It's the episode that threatens to dial 911 while eating some stuffed crust.
That's really, really good. Let's talk about the artistic presentation of this. I'm curious if either of you guys have any sort of themes or like cinematic devices or anything in the storytelling that stood out to you. Dylan, let's start with you.
So my favorite scene in the whole episode was Katie and Tom Schwartz having a discussion in the backyard by the pool by themselves. And what I really liked was the use of space in that, like, just because they're there by themselves, they have this big space, so they're really able to kind of pace and move around each other and kind of get closer, get further, you know, turn to the side, turn towards each other. That brings that physicality that they're allowed to use in the space where it's filmed, instead of just being like sitting down at a, you know, a coffee shop or a place where they're squirting syringes of goop into their mouths, really brings that much more to the scene in terms of like their psychology in that moment, and that like that certain tension between the impulse to settle back into old grooves of friendship and familiarity and the fear of, you know, of being hurt, and the anger that's always close to the surface and threatens to overtake whatever cordial, playful element is also tugging in the other direction. So I really like seeing Schwartz and Katie's post-breakup discussions together. We got like a really great dinner last season And I was really happy to see his return to that here, but having them be standing up in a big space and able to actually communicate so much of what's going on in their minds, not just through their words, but through their bodies, just really made it come alive to me. It was very dynamic as a scene. I thought it was full of tension and really, really great.
Well, and I thought that scene was incredible as well. And it's great juxtapositioned next to, is that a word? Anyway, being placed right next to the incredible argument happening in a very closed space with many more people. So yes, seeing
exactly.
Both of these next to each other, like, raises the tension in a way that or tension, anxiety for a viewer, as well as like the people involved in both of these situations. And the fact that you get a handful of moments where you can hear the screaming happening during Katie and Schwartz's discussion is the sort of thing where that's, it's right. Like, oh, time heals, right? Like, this was not Katie and Schwartz last year. I mean, the Rachel and Scandoval of it all aside, like, this was this, they weren't quite Tom Sandoval and Ariana in this scene, but they were not at this level. And it really kind of goes to show you, because like a lot of things I was noticing, and it's throughout the whole series or season rather, but there's this idea of acceptance versus forgiveness versus resentment. Mm-hmm. Like all of these things like are in a Venn diagram together, but they can evolve quickly, one overtaking another. And this scene that you've pointed out next to the other scene is definitely something that like we're getting over and over again. And the brain rot of being on reality TV leads you into one of those circles over another more times than not. You're never falling right in the middle of like true understanding.
Totally. Yeah. This scene was, I think, obviously the most important scene in terms of the narrative, but mm-hmm. I think just how it was presented visually as well was the strongest point of the episode for me. I mm-hmm. really loved, like you said, Dylan, the use of space here, the contrast of outside, you know, you've got this relationship with Tom and Katie where, you know, they've had previous tension, and there's like obviously a core issue of like the Katie and Max of it all, but it seems like so relaxed. You can feel like the breeze in the air, because it's like Tom is mostly just relieved that he's not like the one at fault, and like you can see it in his body language. And then inside, the way that the inside of James's house is shot is so claustrophobic. Everyone is like on top of each other. It like the walls are so like closed in. There's boxes in the background. Everything is like so tight, and I just like seeing the kind of how it's presented so tense visually inside versus like the relief outside, paired with like, there's that one moment in the water tasting where they've got the carbonated water that they pop like champagne. We have seen the narrative within this season so far. It's been building and building and building for some sort of explosive confrontation between Ariana and Tom, and we finally get the cork popping off of that in this scene where Tom and Ariana are finally like mm-hmm. getting into it and confronting each other, and that tension is starting to release a little bit, or we're at least seeing the champagne go everywhere, or the water go everywhere in this case. So yeah, I thought that this was just a really lovely visual representation of where we're at in the course of the season.
100%. And, you know, I believe you've spoken about this on previous episodes, but, you know, Ariana's still in all black. And so, but everyone has now moved on to bright colors, and especially Tom, but both Toms, quite frankly. But I do think that this is that sort of idea that she's not over it yet. She's still in mourning. She's working through something. But another point that I like just came to me is they're eating Pizza Hut, right? Like standard pizza, very regular, normal, no qualms, basic. We'll just order from Pizza Hut. It's quick and easy. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think of like, what are they trying to tell us about these people that live these faux status symbol lives, but they just order Pizza Hut. It's like when you go to a Walmart or a store similar to Walmart, and everyone who's a model for what, whether it's garden equipment or socks and underwear, are, quote, average looking, right? You're never going to see a supermodel modeling something for Walmart. You're never, I guess you're never going to see a Vanderpump Rules person getting delivery from something way expensive and like compared to the water that we just saw, right?
Yeah, totally.
It's just interesting because there's this idea of like humanizing these people to a fault when it's also being shoved in our faces that they aren't like you. As much as we like are telling a story that you can connect with, these are people you should aspire to be, and they eat pizza just like you.
Yeah, totally. It was such a basic like pizza. They even forgot the ranch.
Was Tom doing too much
despite by going that, to get the
difference? Yeah. I don't know. Of course he's doing too much. He needs to do too much. I'm not a Sandoval apologist by any means, but like, what the hell do you do here? You are stuck.
Yeah, he's stuck in that house. Any opportunity to sprint out the front door like a frightened dog, he's going to take it.
let's get your favorite poll quote, Rob. What was your favorite quote here?
Okay. And I feel like I need to couch this with a like, I appreciate Ariana, and I think she was dealt a heaping pile of garbage in terms of everything that's happened in the last couple of years. But my pull quote is, I'm being harassed. I'm going to call 911 in the middle of just an ex argument with all of your friends there. Now, this show in particular has a problem with calling the cops.
We're gonna get to Krista in a minute.
And we will be talking about that soon, but not only all of the stuff between Kristen, Stassi, Jax, Brittany, but even this season, Ariana in like episode one is like, well, if he throws a party at my house, I'm gonna call the cops. It's like, call the cops should not be the fallback for these people. Like, I'm of the opinion you don't call the cops unless it's something life threatening, right? Like, I understand like abuse situations and like she is feeling attacked and that is all fair and valid, but we are so quick to say, I'm calling the cops. I'm calling 911. It's like, just leave. Right. Yeah. Like, and I understand, I get it. But like, that is the pull quote for me because it's more than this moment. It speaks volumes to how miserable Ariana is feeling right now because of Tom Sandoval. It speaks volumes on the history of inequality and like taking the easy way out that the people in this show often do. And they don't see it. There's no way you would threaten to call the cops twice in this season if you ever even thought back to like Prank Wars episode or the Stassi Kristen scenario.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting because this kind of like shows that, obviously Ariana is completely entitled to the moral high ground.
100%.
But she is also like, she has the social high ground, at least at the start of this season, and it seems like she feels like she is also entitled to the legal high ground. So the fact that she is seeing, you know, her like kind of losing the social high ground, this like want to flex the legal high ground that we see manifesting not only in the like, I'm going to call the cops, like you've said, but how often she's talking about her lawyer and getting like the itemized, like all the items in the house and trying to make sure that she comes out on top there as well is really interesting. And like, I can't fault her for that because she was like obviously super wronged. It's interesting just to see how, you know, these feelings that she has are kind of manifesting in these different areas. And, you know, in some cases that's like completely valid. In other cases, like maybe not so valid. Like she's not entitled to call the cops just because, you know, Sandoval is at the same party as her.
Yeah. And, you know, just to stay on that for one more moment, like there is so much going on. Like I've conversed with other Bravo fans many times, and the parasocial relationship that comes with this sort of stuff is a lot of transference, is a lot of like, I've been in a scenario exactly like this. And we're all watching the same show here. So, and we're all aware of how highly edited these things are, or we should be. We should always keep that in our mind, right? That like, this is a story they're telling. Bravo has a quote, secret sauce, which I'm sure is water and booze or something. but it is one of those things where what this really shows me is that Ariana is still hurting. It's only been a few months since the previous season ended. And she is in a spot. She talks about money situations in previous episodes. She is in a spot where she had to do this season, right? She had to be here, but she obviously doesn't want to be here. So yeah, Tom, everything's going to trigger Ariana, and it is because of you, and you chose to be on this show as well. So Ariana is more in a space of like having to be on this show. You maybe not so much.
But why would Sandoval not have to be on the show more than Ariana does, since his financial struggles seem to be more intense than hers? At least,
well,
from
that's
what
a good
said.
Point. Maybe he is in the same scenario, but he seems to at least have, you know, if you want to buy it, you know, this career as a musician. No, that's not going to be paying the bills.
Yeah,
but he seems to have an avenue where, like, he wants to be on the show. So it's okay for him to be on the show in this like big broad sense. Yeah. Ariana doesn't want to be on the show. She needs the paycheck to be on the show or like to continue her life and move on. That's where I'm trying to go with that.
I'm just wondering if even beyond the financial considerations, which I mean, we obviously don't know the full details of them, if either of them, Tom or Ariana, could even picture their life without the show at this point, if that would even be something they would consider, because they've just been so used to it being such a part of their life and being able to litigate their position, their position of, you know, morally, whatever, from the perspective of the show, knowing full well that if they leave the show, then they surrender their public image in a large sense to the other people who do stay on the show.
Yeah, I think Ariana, by being in Chicago and now accepting a hosting gig for Love Island, understands that there's a life beyond Vanderpump Rules. And we're seeing in episodes like this that she could care less what anyone else thinks if they're not going to be on her side, for good or ill, right? For good or ill. And that there is a life beyond Vanderpump Rules. I don't think Tom can see a life beyond Vanderpump Rules.
No, I don't think so either.
Bravo rewards bad behavior, so Tom Sandoval will get his own Bravo show within 5 years, and I'm sure that is how he'll live out the rest of his days.
Yeah, totally. Let's get into our highlights now. Rob, what were your highlights from this episode?
Highlights of this episode, I think that scene was a highlight just because of what we talked about between pairing it against the Katie and Tom discussion. And I liked seeing the resolution of Katie's like lie by omission, like monologue that then she kind of got her own comeuppance, and she didn't try and deflect away from it the way everyone tries to deflect away from things in the show. She actually owned it. So that was one extra part to that that I love. I thought the beach sequence was interesting. It gets tricky because we have another, you know, fairly uncomfortable edit of Ariana. I think they're still trying to paint her in a certain way. I think what we didn't see in that scene is that she was drinking a lot of White Claws, which probably, you know, like every scene you got, it was either White Claw or Lover Boy or something.
Right,
And Tom is sober on camera for these scenes. So he knows how he thinks it will make him look good on camera. So yeah. Oh, you want me to leave? Okay. I'll go away and stare off onto the waves and contemplate life. You know, I love that because it's so blatantly bullshit, but, yeah. But I liked seeing that play out. Another thing that I felt was just interesting about this episode. Now there was something at the beginning and I'm struggling at the moment, but I think I will just say that, and I know we've talked it to death, but like this water guy,
he's back.
And y'all are in Canada, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
And did you ever have the 90s infomercials with Matthew Lesko, the guy who wore like a question mark suit? And was like, I'm going to teach you how to get money. I guess he wouldn't because it was like government subsidies. So it would have been United States only. But he would try and sell you these books that would be like, you can apply for this grant and you can do this for your small business. And it was like, he looked like the Riddler, but talked. And he didn't have like a German accent, but like he talked in the sort of way that this water guy talked. And I swear, if you put a Matthew Lesko and German water guy next to each other, they would have their own reality show and it would be phenomenal. So
let's get it done.
Yes. We're calling on you listeners. We need it and we need it now. But those were kind of the big moments. And of course they were the big talking moments of the episode, of course, but those were the highlights for me, quite frankly, in this one, because I just want to say that, like, I think the editing and storytelling has been bad this season. I'm still watching, I'm still enjoying, I'm still covering it, but I feel like there's been cuts made behind the scenes, like between of editing staff or production staff. They're just telling us very, very, very basic stories with very little nuance, and I have to hope that it's because there's like some big like prestige coming at the end of this or something, like, oh, you thought that we were doing it, but it's really just a slow burn all the way there. But I don't know if I can give production that much credit this season. It feels rushed and it feels a bit much. So to me, the talking points are the things that they definitely put in as tent poles to be talking points of this episode.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I have actually enjoyed this, I think, more than what I have sensed online in terms of this season. Like, I do find that this journey to find a new baseline is interesting to me, just like what this means for this like social dynamic that we had gotten so used to up until last season. Like at the beginning of last season, I was like, this show is done. I don't even know if I'm going to watch this season. Then obviously all hell broke loose and we got one of the greatest seasons of reality TV ever put on air. But yeah, so it's interesting to see kind of where everything that we have known about Vanderpump Rules kind of got like thrown in the wind and all the pieces are kind of scattering back, and to see how everything comes back together. I would agree that I think it feels like Vanderpump Rules is still maybe on its last legs, like we're seeing the dying breath, because it does feel like everyone is rushing to get back to this dynamic that they had prior to season 10. And if they get back there really quickly and there's no like long standing like issues as a result, like this show is like reality TV needs like tension and problems in order for it to be successful. So the fact that they're trying to rush back into what's comfortable is not very like, doesn't give me a lot of hope for the future, but seeing that journey is like compelling to me at least.
Yeah, I can get with that. Especially the fact that like Alex Baskin had them do like this like come to Jesus meeting after they got back from Lake Tahoe. And then surprise, surprise, that's also when we're seeing like everything amp up, right?
Yeah.
One question I did want to ask real quick before, and I know we've got some other scenes to cover, but like, can we take a temperature in the room about the Anne situation with the interview while at work for Tom?
Yeah, I think that Anne is a really like fun presence on camera. That's another thing this season has going for it. It's got like some side characters that I really love seeing whenever they're on screen. And Anne is one. Joe is another that like I just love.
I love Joe.
I was really disappointed we didn't have her at all this
episode. I know. We need more Joe. You can hate Joe or whatever as a viewer, but you cannot deny that she is unlike anyone else that has ever been on this show. And I love that.
Yeah,
totally.
The one thing I want to point out, though, about Anne is like these like amateur content creators, and you know, no shade, I'm an amateur content creator, but they'll be like, well, I did my research and Anne was in an episode of The Office and Anne does sketch comedy and Anne is an actor. So that means Anne is acting on this show. And it's like, well,
she also lives in LA.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. She's acting the same way everyone else on this show is acting. And also
totally.
Anne was, if your argument is Anne had one line on an episode of The Office 10 years ago, then like maybe Anne needs another job, right? Yeah, like maybe exactly. Anne needs to be an assistant to pay the bills. Like it's not, she's not some like Manchurian Vanderpump candidate who's come in to change things.
Totally. I thought that this like this Anne like B plot that we're getting is it's kind of boring, but some of the like brief moments that we get as a result of it are pretty fun. Like this idea of like Tom like lurking in the shadows and like you know, eavesdropping on Anne's job
interview upstairs.
Really, really funny. And then when like it comes up that he's like eavesdropping, he can't even beat those allegations because he's sitting there like doing that at the same at that exact moment. Like when Ariana's like talking about the dog murderer thing and they're discussing Anne, and yeah, he's not doing himself any favors by like sitting there and like eavesdropping in the shadows again. So
behind the really, cactus, just peeking through.
Yeah, exactly. Dylan, what were your highlights?
We've covered them. It's been the Schwartz and Katie moment. It's the water guy. I will say, just to quickly address the idea that this season has maybe not been great, I've been liking it a lot in terms of like the character psychology a bit. I do think production's done a good job. I do think that they've had not much to work with. Like when you're trying to make a plot point out of Schwartz and Sheena kissing once in Vegas 12 years ago, that's trying to gnaw every last bit of grizzle off a bone that's already been thoroughly picked clean. So I did kind of have a moment when I sat down to watch the new episode where I'm like, episode 10 already? Yeah. Like, wow, we're in the back end of this already? Like nothing's happened. So, but I've been really struggling. I've been enjoying it a lot, as I've been saying all through it, but it's true that it has been very low event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And kudos to Katie for like making something happen, like taking the moment and, you know, going and fucking Max. Yeah. Like,
and we finally are going to get like one episode of Schwartz and Katie trying to date the same woman. Oh my Lord. Yeah. Like, you know, that's going to be about 5 minutes of screen time, given how big they made it in the preview.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I think we covered most of my highlights as well. Let's get into our stars. Rob, we'll start with you. Who are your stars here?
Star number one, water guy. He's just, I mean, Martin, that's right. Martin gets a star for just knowing how to talk to upper middle class reality stars. Like, he knows how to sell that water. Yeah. And hey, it's good to have a hobby, right? Like, I think he's a good water guy. That's wonderful. I think another star is definitely Pizza Hut, because it's the it's the everyone pizza. It's the pizza you can go to in a pinch. You know what you're getting. No surprises with Pizza Hut.
Craig, do we have that promo code for a Pizza Hut that we can drop here?
Oh, I wish. This is like a point of contention between my wife and I, because I love Pizza Hut and she is not into it. So, yeah, I would love a Pizza Hut.
So you order it like twice a week, and every time you're like, what? You don't like it? Well, it's shoving pizza in your face. You should have told me.
And I think my third star is going to go to Katie, because I'm usually not a fan of Katie, and not for like the reason a lot of jerks online aren't a fan of Katie. But I there's a lot of things that we could get into on a deeper episode, but Katie really knocked it out of the park for me in this episode. I think her monologues hit in the way that I loved. Her talking heads were great. And the way that she, I said it before, like so many times people want to deflect on these episodes, and she didn't deflect. She just had the conversation with Tom, admitted she was like, you know, apologetic to the right amount, that because she doesn't need to explain anything to Tom, but she owned what she did, and they had a great little moment there. Tom, of course, takes it too far and is like, let's be best friends and get dinner every weekend. But like, she also was able to then say like, well, I don't want to do that, but I do want to be able to be amicable with you. And that's why she gets a star.
Yeah, totally. And I would say that Schwartz is wrong about her like not serving. There is a quote, there's a moment in that conversation where he's like, yeah, not serving is your MO, which is so harsh. And like maybe true from of Schwartz. Like previous yeah, exactly. But maybe true of like previous seasons as well. Like she has had some bad eras. But I'm liking what she's thrown out there this season. I think she's just like really owning her looks. So
and definitely in that scene, she looked way cooler than Schwartz. And
personally, I could not disagree more. Honestly, I thought she brought it up that Schwartz has bad fashion sense, and you know what? That's my style. I'll own to it. I could wear the kind of thing Schwartz was wearing, and I dig it because I think that's cool as hell. And Katie's wearing like a white t-shirt with like a graphic of a bra on it. That is like one stutter step away from being like one of those aprons with like a sexy bikini body on it that they sell at like tourist shops,
like a tuxedo t-shirt too.
That's below a tuxedo t-shirt. That is. Yeah. I thought Katie does have some good looks. I'm not against liking somebody who sashays around in nightgowns in the middle of the day in Los Angeles for some reason. But I think that she had a bad look in that scene, so it was hypocritical of her to like call out Schwartz's cool 50s bowling outfit.
Can I, since we're on the topic of clothing, can I discuss something that I heard in one of your recent episodes? That it's like, you know, the thing when you're like listening and you're like, these people don't want to hear about it, but I'm now here talking to you and I'm going to talk about it.
yeah.
Allie wasn't dressing James. James was dressing Allie.
Yeah, that's right.
Which
he
is
got
right.
That wrong last episode.
But and it's no problem. Yeah. Like that happens, but like that is such a weird,
it is
Kanye West power dynamic bullshit that like really we're not getting anything from James, even humor, most of this season. But what we are getting, I think, is telling a lot. So I just had to squeeze that in there. Because
I'm glad you did, because I actually wanted to say that last episode, and I kind of forgot to. You know how it goes. We're in the middle of it. But yes, it was James saying he dresses Allie. And I do think it's kind of creepy because Allie is obviously much younger than him and is like somebody who's clearly never had like a real job. So it is starting to smell a little bit of like controlling her life vibes. But I don't
still
know.
May not have a real job, depending on how you look at it. But
no, clearly does not. Like,
but yeah, I just had to put that in, not for correction purposes, but on this like weird, we're kind of fading James into the background right now, because maybe we don't want him to be the highlight of anything on Vanderpump Rules at the moment.
I think that there's definitely like a dark dynamic that James has that is kind of being like smoothed over in the like campaign for James to be the number one guy in the group. Like people are wanting to turn a blind eye to like, well, all of his past behavior that we've seen, like especially like his relationship with Kristen was like wild on camera. And yeah, like you said, that is a very controlling dynamic. And yeah, I think this, like, one thing that has really kind of bothered me prior to the season airing, like when this was all going on and, you know, Graham got returned to James, was everyone was wanting to really, like, whitewash James's behavior and make him out to be this, like, Caesar Milan that is, mm-hmm. like, going to save Graham. And it was all, like, the evil Raquel who, like, caused this dog to have aggression issues, which, like, yeah, it's just something that has, like, really bothered me, because we have seen James be so, like, immature and mm-hmm. be so, like, abusive. Like, I would say that he has been abusive, especially if you're watching those seasons with James and Kristen. There's a very dark dynamic there. And yeah. So to be like, oh, no, James is just this, like, playful guy who can do no wrong. He's the number one guy. Like, that is just blatantly not true. And that's not to say that he's not, like, a great reality TV character. I've been on these podcasts, like, for as long as we've been doing it, singing James's praises as a, like, character on reality TV. But yeah, it's, let's not pretend that he's an angel.
Yeah, or any of these people are, for that matter.
Yeah, like, exactly.
They know what they're doing, and they've been on there, and it is, it, you know, time will tell. You know, we're going to look back at some of these in, you know, a decade or something and go, whew, boy, that was, that was different times, you know?
Totally. So,
but yeah, that's, I just wanted to at least shoehorn that in there for a moment.
For sure. Dylan, who are your stars?
You know, I'm going to give a first star to Schwartz, because I think he made that scene happen with Katie. And I think he had some good lines. I like how he was calculating his, like, fidelity average, like he was doing, like, saber metrics. I thought that was cute, and, like, a lot of cute Schwartz jokes. He apologizes for it right after. Shouldn't have to apologize for it. Stop apologizing for your funny jokes, Tom Schwartz. But that's his role right now. He's in the hangdog role. I do appreciate Katie's contribution to that scene too. We talked about last time how Katie makes, like, a great villain, and she does have a good moments. A good couple of moments I agree where she gets to be, like, the cynic in the group. I just think her takes are just bad in this episode, because, like, in terms of being like, oh, people who exercise haven't experienced real true happiness. Like, I don't exercise that much, but I mean, people who exercise are right. Like, that's, like, yeah. you do feel better after. That's undeniable. I'm also not going to take advice.
I agree with Katie on that. I'm sorry. I don't get the endorphin rush when I'm working out. I just, like, I do it because it's something that you have to do. I respect to Katie for that, because I don't feel it either.
Okay, fair point. I think it's real. I also think water tasting is real, but, you know, that's an opinion. I'm also not going to take advice about real true happiness from Katie Maloney. But,
you don't say.
Second star, give it to Martin. Awesome yeah. presence. I'm almost certain he's a brand ambassador for Nevis Water, the German
he's
company
got an
who makes
TikTok.
That $1,000 yeah. bottle.
Yeah.
But glad to have him on the show. Third star, let's give it to Danny, because we have a rare Danny sighting. She doesn't have a line, but she's there.
Oh, yeah. She made about as much of an impact on this episode as she did in her entire time on the season that she was on. So,
yeah.
Wait, are we talking Dana? Is that it?
Oh, Dana, right.
Right, yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm not trying to... Sorry, yeah. No, fair enough. This is not my... But yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, what? Why is Dana here? Like, yeah. I understand from behind the scenes that they're still friends with her, but this reminds me of when she went to make out with Peter in the bathroom. Like, that is as much time as she's had on the show, and then she dated Max for a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, this is wild to me.
Yeah, no, the fact that there was one season where she was positioned as, like, the new star makes seeing her, like, appear... at, like, just randomly at a dinner where she has no lines. It kind of gives you that kind of feeling when, like, somebody who was, like, a first overall draft pick shows up in a lineup, like, 10 years later, on like the fourth line as a call up from the minor leagues, and you're like, oh yeah, Christ, what happened to you, man?
I actually got that like excited feeling when we got a little like 2 second clip that Satchel was in the background during the like beach day. I was like, oh yeah, Satchel sighting.
Wait, so, Satchel was there in this episode? Or are you talking about last season?
It was a flashback.
It was like a flashback.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I could use some Satchel back too. Yeah.
God. Satchel with his socks and sandals at the beach. Yeah. Hey, but no shade.
Yeah. did we get all of your stars there, Dylan?
Yeah, that's three.
Okay, cool. So like you guys, I think Katie deserves a star. I think she did a lot to make things happen. I think that you gave too much credit to Tom Schwartz for making that scene happen, because sure. Katie was the one who left the house to come out, and like Schwartz was just like, oh, is there something you want to talk to me about? And they have that like kind of funny, awkward exchange. So she's also responsible for Satchel being there in the first place so that we could get that flashback. So love that. I think like one thing that I have said about Katie several times, and I'll say it again, is that she is underappreciated as a reality television pro. I think she has been this constant point of like tension amongst the cast, because she's like a cloud that can hover over any sort of environment
storm cloud.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's one of the things that has been able to carry Vanderpump Rules through the hard times, like this toxic dynamic that she brings to any conflict that she has, whether it's with Tom Schwartz, who we've seen a lot, but she's also like beefed with practically everyone,
and
especially like, you know, Sheena. So just love what Katie brings to the show, and I think people really don't give her much credit at all for what she brings to the table. So definitely a star for Katie. Like you guys, got to give a star to Martin, the water guy, as seen on the news, as seen on Playboy Radio, as seen on TikTok. Radio, Playboy
Radio. Tastes like beep.
Yeah. Playboy Radio. That's what everybody wants from Playboy, is hearing words.
Reminds me of like the fucking Howard Stern E-Channel show from the 90s. You know, Playboy Radio.
And I'll give my final star actually to Ariana, who I don't think I've given her a star yet, but I really feel like she brought a lot to this episode, like just really kind of releasing. It's what we've been dying to see. You know, she gets a gold star from me for cleaning the litter box once a week. That's definitely not frequently enough, but, you know, kudos. I think that this, like, the conflict that we're seeing between her and Tom, there's obviously like so much subtext to what's going on, and what they're choosing to like argue over is really, really funny to me. Like they're so mad at each other for like not taking responsibility, while also themselves not taking responsibility. You know, Ariana not taking responsibility for having the food and the old skewers in her room, and like, or her room being so messy that you wouldn't realize that there's a dog in there.
It's wild to me. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's just, I feel like I need to say it, because so many people are in this mind space of Ariana can do no wrong. And that's fine. She was wronged. She is in a state. A dirty room is enigmatic of, you know, what she's possibly feeling inside, but like, you got to take the L on leaving garbage out. You just got to, it'll make your argument. Totally. You will look so much better on camera if saying like, yeah, I should have thrown that food away, but I also should have known someone was going to be coming into my room to fix something, you know, and that would change everything. It would change everything.
Yeah, totally. Or like, she does have like the moral high ground to be like, why were you going into my room when the door is locked? Like that should be the battle that she's picking, not like trying to deflect accountability and make it seem more like a severe foul on Tom's part than it actually was. But there, we are seeing like dogs being used as chess pieces throughout this whole season, right? We're seeing that with Graham as well. And, you know, how she talks about her, how Ariana talks about her past dog. And so it's not totally surprising that, you know, this incident is being used that way, but you're right. Ariana could have handled this a lot better and in a way that would have played on the cameras way more. I think that Ariana is like a victim of the amount of time it takes to go from like filming to air, because I do think that this argument would, if it was taking place on social media in the moment that it actually happened, it would have definitely, that would have landed, but it's not landing now, you know, 7-8 months later, now that it's airing and people aren't as fired up about the scandal of it all and kind of seeing it from a with more perspective. So I don't think that it's entirely Ariana's like fault that she is making this emotional case, because like all the context clues that she has going into this situation say like, yeah, this makes sense. This is the angle to go. But if you are maybe a bit more practiced of a reality TV personality, you have to know what to filter out and what is like, you know, the social media noise that is happening right now is not going to be the same as when this airs. So I think she's victimized a little bit from that, but it's still like a really compelling dynamic that they've got together. And I am loving what she brought to this episode more so than any other episode that we've seen her in. So I want to give her some kudos there.
Absolutely. 100%. Couldn't agree more.
All right. Well, let's jump into the valley. Let's start with a 3-sentence summary, Rob.
All right, here we go. In the style of my episode descriptions, when Kristen stirs the gossip potion in the cauldron of half truths, history soon rears its ugly head. Does Jax have what it takes to stay silent an entire episode? Are Luke's views on relationships steeped in toxic masculinity? Is a life coach supposed to give hugs? It's the episode that invites you to be, excuse me. It's the episode that invites you to a sophisticated dinner at an abandoned piece of real estate.
Really good.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, I have these written down. So yeah. Listeners, that is not off the dome.
Okay. So let's talk about the artistic presentation of this. Anything stand out in terms of how the story was told or the themes in it for you, Rob?
Big things for me. I said things, but I mean themes for me in this episode is happiness. And I said verses last time, but I'm staying on this versus train. Happiness versus loyalty, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times that gets intermixed in these people's interpretations of their own lives, right? And so how that's then displayed to us as a viewer is like, if you're loyal, you will be happy. But that is not the case at all. Sometimes you have to exit the scenario to keep yourself happy. And by bringing up something like Kristen does in this event of like, well, I'm just saying what was said to me so that it's all out on the table or whatever, is actually causing a lot of people to not be happy. It doesn't need, like, it isn't a, you know, to quote last episode's title, it's not always tit for tat.
Totally. You know, what's interesting to me is how, like, going into this season, you brought up like what Kristen's been doing in this episode. Going into the season, I was expecting Kristen and Jax to really be like owning a bunch of noobs at the reality TV star. And to see like Kristen really struggle, especially this episode, like really just like misplaying is it, like, kind of surprised me as like my instincts as a reality TV viewer, because, you know, Kristen is one of the all-time greats. But then, like, you know, thinking about it a little bit more, Kristen has always been like messy, and that is what makes her great. So the fact that she is, you know, that she has like created this huge mess is well, I'm thankful for it. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised that, you know, she is not there like picking off these noobs. She's a team player, team chaos.
100%. Yeah,
that's what she's there for, is to create messiness. Yeah. That's what we want to see from her.
And she does it in a way that she knows exactly what she's doing. Whereas you could say the same thing for Jax, but you can clock Jax on his situation. You can clock that Jax is like planning something for drama, which is like in the last episode when he like has to pull Luke aside and be like, okay, I just need you to know that Alex is going to be here. Like, Jax didn't plan to do that. Jax just planned to have Alex ambush Luke. Kristen planned to tell everyone about this Michelle rumor, and she planned to then apologize at the dinner table, but she also knows that no one is going to let her apologize at the dinner table. So she understands that the group dynamic, the need to be loud, is going to overplay the need for forgiveness.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting because, like, coming off of watching a lot of seasons of Housewives where we see, like, it's so common when you can watch a cast of Housewives and they are trying to get someone like off the show. Like, there's more of a game where it's like, you want to knock someone out. Like, you can actually knock someone out and get them off the cast. You can really like sideline someone. To see this cast, because it's brand new, they have to play nicely together. Like, they need to like carry this out, and they need to build a foundation together. They can't be trying to like take someone out of the cast completely. So it's interesting to see that when you're so used to watching, you know, a bunch of people playing for keeps.
And Jax, Kristen, and Janet know how this works. And that's where it's very interesting to see everyone else kind of like learning in real time how they're going to present themselves on screen. And we know that Jesse and Michelle end up, you know, splitting up by the end of the season. But Jesse, it's clear to me, has absolutely no idea how he comes off. The fucking hubris of assholery in this guy. And you can tell when Jax is like putting it on, right? Jax also, not without his faults, but golden television maker. The same way Kristen is, but a different side of the coin. Jesse just thinks he knows everything. And I've talked about this on, sorry, I'm going on a bit of a rant here, but I talked about this on a previous episode I covered of The Valley where, you know, not to get too deep on the life coach couch for a moment, but but like, my dad was one of those guys who like expected me to just know stuff, right? And so seeing someone on camera where you're like, no, dude, you have to be taught things. Like, you are not born with like the information to do something. And he feels like if he just exerts himself, like at this dinner table, you know, like slamming his fists down and being like, no, now it's this person's time to talk because you need to talk and listen to her. And I am the brute force of all information, is wild.
And the funniest thing about that, if I could just jump in quickly, the funniest thing about that is how he does that to be like, you have to listen to Michelle talking. And then a minute later cuts Michelle off, shushes her so that he can talk. That was just the peak asshole moment for me.
And that is him. That is him. He is laying himself out there and he has no clue. He has no clue that when you're trying to kick your friend's ass at roller hockey when you're mid 40s, is not as cool as you think it looks.
Totally. Dylan, what did you take away from the storytelling here?
I do appreciate Jesse being here, just to finish that thought, like I've said before, because I do like there being a perfect asshole who seems to have no awareness, no remorse. And Jesse absolutely seems to confirm more and more each episode that that's exactly what he is. I think in terms of like the way the story is being told, I'm starting to get the sense that when they present this as like the more mature, growing up offshoot of Vanderpump Rules, they just mean it's becoming Real Housewives, because this is such a Real Housewives plot line for me to have it be entirely focused around not necessarily what happened, but how information was disseminated, you know, just the endless haggling over who had the right to say what and through which channel did this information make its way back to the person it is about. That is that's just like classic Housewives plot where you lose track of what the original issue was, because it just all falls down to who said what to whom and who had the right to do that and how could we trace what to what. And also the fact that it all comes to a head at like a big, like, you know, dinner scene is also, sure, you know, obviously classic Housewives shit. I do like that we get Kristen in the center again. You know, like we mentioned, Jax gets pushed to the sidelines for once, like as with his bar in this show, in this episode, he's just seems to be not contributing anything. And we get Kristen, being kind of a floundering mess, but maybe, like you say, Rob, having more strategy that is obvious to watching her. I do think she's like not completely, but semi vindicated by everything that comes out later, where it kind of seems like the gist of what she communicated was actually communicated to her. And that everybody who originally was like, that no way was anything like that ever said, kind of starts backtracking and coming back to realize that, or to admit that, yeah, okay, so we kind of said that. It does seem to kind of boil down to the idea of like, was like the word racist used, or did they just invoke the idea that she has sympathies with that edge of the political, of the American political spectrum that is associated with racism.
And what that means when you say things like that, right?
Yeah,
when you talk about, you know, couched language in laws, right? Like, Kristen's not going to go gossip to someone and use semantics that way. She's going to be like, Michelle, I was heard Michelle did this, and you know what that means. That means that they're trying to say that she's a racist, and Kristen's trying to boil it down to exactly the talking point. And, you know, that doesn't work out for her well, but I also think she knows that. She knows what's going to get these people riled up.
Yeah, and also maybe it will work out for her well if this makes her end up looking like the victim of a pile-on and having Jesse just straight up calling her a racist to her face at the table. If that puts her in a position where suddenly she seems sympathetic because she seems to be getting all the attacks aimed at her, then maybe it does work out well for her.
Well, and being the first person fired from Bravo to actually go back on Bravo and talk about exactly what, well, maybe not yet. I'm sure that'll be next episode, but like how we end this episode with the headlines with Kristen talking about how she was educating herself on, you know, bias and how she presented herself in the faith situation. And it is one of those things where like, yeah, that is going to that is taking the L that we're talking about with the Maya situation previously. She understands. She's one of the only people in that whole scenario of people getting fired that actually, I think, admitted to stuff and educated themselves and didn't kind of just like sweep it away or get defensive. Like, there was a little bit of both of that. But Kristen is the person who, in real time, spoke on it, discussed it on the podcast, is now back on a show, discussed it, and is letting them do the editing in this sort of way and not afraid to discuss it. Like, when you hear Brittany and her, while they're getting churros, say like, and of all people, you? Like, why would you want to bring that up? It's like, yeah, Brittany, we know that's how you want to go about it.
Totally.
But Kristen knows what she's doing here.
Yeah, 100%. That leads into what I identified as a theme for this, was this idea of like labels. That was the number one thing that people were actually worked up about this episode. And it was this, there was this detachment between like labels and the behavior that they represent. And they were far more concerned about getting this label associated with them, and as opposed to the actual like behavior that would yeah. cause that.
Yeah.
And yep. I think it's Kristen even has a problem even like saying the word racist. She like, she's just so afraid to say that. She refers to it as the R word at one point. Mm. She's like, I would never use the R word. Like, you can say racist. Like, you need yeah. to be able to say the word racist in order to call out racist behavior. So the fact that she is so worried about this label of racist being like thrown around because like she has been accused of being a racist, and you know, she's trying to show that she has grown from that, but is still like really walking on eggshells in that area. I thought it was a really interesting to see this dynamic, and you know, especially like not just the racist label, but also the label of Republican. They're like worried about like what it would mean to be labeled as a Republican in California, while in the same episode throwing a party at an $18 million mansion that they are selling yeah. in Beverly Hills, and talking about how they like go to, you know, Capri to like hobnob with billionaires. Yeah. Like, obviously you're Republican, you're behaving like a Republican. So,
and let me tell you, there's a just, hell of a lot of Republicans in California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, it's kind of, I didn't quite understand why they keep being like, how could you insinuate Michelle's a Republican? Like, she's a couple times first generation Mexican and first generation Persian, by which I assume they mean first generation American from yeah. Mexican and Persian parents. But I don't understand why somebody with that heritage could not be Republican or cannot be racist. I don't understand the reasoning there. It's
wild. They started using those things interchangeably, and like, I think there's a lot of like screwballs out there one way reason or another, but like, you do have to differentiate these things when you're getting into the nuance of these conversations. And, you know, just not for nothing, Jasmine, a queer person of color on the show, gets one talking head about this.
Yeah.
And I think that,
yeah.
And, you know, I'm not here to like say what's right or what's wrong, but what that presents to me as a viewer is that what we're really trying to show is a bunch of these people terrified of what you're saying, Craig, the label. They're more right. worried about how it's going to affect their brand and who they are online. They're more worried about getting canceled than they are of their actual behaviors, right? And that's the end all be all here. That's what they're showing and not telling us, is like, these people want to keep their job. That's what they want. They want to be able yeah. to keep their job and keep where they are and not have to write a Notes app apology ever in their life.
Yeah, totally. Let's get your pull quote. What quote stood out to you?
Well, right in line with what we're talking about, the pull quote that really jumped out to me is, I wasn't always this way, but now I'm a walking truth serum. And that's from Kristen. And I kind of got to say, when they were like, going back to a lot of the Kristen flashbacks all the way to like 2013, like, everything she said in those flashbacks was true. We just didn't know it was true until like the 10th season of Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah.
So she might have actually always been walking truth serum, but now she's totally. Doing it intentionally.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And, you know, there's still probably truth to come out based on what she has said about James and what she has like
yeah.
said about how he operates in a relationship. We're getting like glimmers of that. So, yeah, I love that.
Real quick, did you all catch the clip of Ariana on Kristen and Luke's new rebranded podcast Balancing Act?
Where no.
They're talking. And now, here's the thing. This is a big like red yarn theory that I don't necessarily subscribe to, but it's one of those fun ones. They're talking about Ariana's boyfriend, current boyfriend, Dan, and they're like, oh, he's so great. You just light up when you're talking about him. And like, and Kristen says, and Luke, you remember when you like met him for the first time? I believe it was like Sheena's wedding. And then he's like, yeah. And then we all went to Applebee's in San Francisco, and everyone's like, hang on, Sheena's wedding.
Yeah.
That she was still with Sandoval at that time. And yeah, it is probably a flub. It is probably she meant something else. But now Kristen has like doubled down and was like, no, Luke was correcting me and saying that we actually met him at Applebee's in San Francisco. And it's like, well, that's not how the language actually worked either. Kristen would have been so much better if she would have just owned up and been honest and said like, oh no, I fucked up. I said Sheena's wedding, but what I meant was this other thing. Like I just slip of the tongue. I was thinking of some other party, but instead by like going, oh no, Luke was correcting me and it was actually not this. It's like, no, you're not on reality TV right now. This is just Instagram comments and podcasts. Come on.
That's yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I guess Ariana met him at a wedding, right? That's yes, where they met.
A so, different wedding.
Yeah, maybe that's where the confusion is coming up. But I absolutely do love, I do love the wild speculation. I'm here for yeah that.
Hell, if Ariana is somehow met Dan, but while she was still Sandoval, I want to hear it. I want to see it all unfold.
Oh yeah, totally. let's get your highlights.
Highlights of this episode. I found it's kind of like a negative highlight in the sense that like, and I said it in the description, like Jax has two lines the whole episode. And I take that as a highlight only because I'm surprised that I was still captivated this whole episode without any Jax. Right? Like they talk about berries at the beginning and he says berries look pretty. And then he tries on capri pants and then he like says he's just going to be quiet at the argument. Like that's his three act of this whole episode. So that's a highlight for me.
Although we did get a moment with Jax at the restaurant. And one of the things that I've liked about the treatment of Jax this series has been doing is like showing him as like having like undergone growth since we last saw him. And the growth that we see is him like trying to avert his eyes like really hard from looking at this woman's chest.
We did get that scene.
Still can't let it go without like making a comment afterwards. Like that is more mature than we have seen him in the past, but like that is the level of growth that we're talking about here. I really love that.
I mean, Sue Ellen Mishke comes walking through the door and Jax is like humdy dum de dum. Another highlight for me is the life coach instead of therapist. Classic. They can't, some of these people just cannot break the stigma of therapy at all. It's like, well, I like the idea of a coach because sports, but if I go to a therapist that means I'm crazy. And it is wild because they're attempting the same results but from someone who is not professionally equipped to actively consult in marriage counseling. And this was a highlight for me because this is Bravo at its finest. This is where people who are on Bravo at its finest, they are being so vulnerable to this dude who, quite frankly, is giving me the weirdest energy with how he's sitting, how he's touching them, how he like gives the weirdest, longest hug to Michelle when he walks in. Like everything about it is like pseudoscientific language and just getting them to be vulnerable. I mean, hell, when they do legit therapy in front of a camera, you know, I cock an eyebrow at that, as we all do. But at least that person is a licensed therapist, as far as I can tell. This guy is outright saying, like, I am not licensed. I am a life coach. And boy, howdy, if there is not a bigger scam on this planet Earth. I mean, it might be podcasting at someone while telling them to scream. But this is right up there with that.
I was really hoping that we get like a scene where they do that as like a paired session.
And I think my other highlight just has to be the Kristen monologue at the end. I think we talked about it before, but it is big for any person, whether they're a reality star or not. But like, I love seeing people, not as I've said many times, not deflect and like own their shit. And that is where they are going to succeed is that sort of behavior. Like, no one is 100% good and no one is 100% bad. And but like being able to like recognize that in the movie we're directing in our head, we're the main star and that's what everyone thinks. Like, you need to understand that, like, the more times you own up to being an asshole when you are an asshole, the better the outcome is, because you have less chances at like being an asshole when you're actively admitting your faults. So I love that.
Totally. Dylan, how about yourself? What were your highlights?
We've pretty much covered it all. I'll just add to that Kristen's wearing a graphic tee with some mushrooms on it that I thought was really cool. Just like a really cool shirt that I wish I had.
And James May original, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Send one of those to Katie. She could use some pointers on her graphic tee game.
I think we covered most of my highlights as well. I think the one thing that we haven't touched on, like, Danny and Nia, we didn't see a lot of them, but I am liking what they're bringing as kind of this like stable cornerstone to this group dynamic. They seem like they've got a really like decent relationship. I guess Janet and Jason also seem like they're fairly stable, but they're going through a transition, whereas we're seeing you know, Danny and Nia as like having already gone through that. So overall, I'm just like really liking the dynamic that this cast has, not just in terms of like how they interact with each other, but like where they're at in their journeys. It's all kind of across a spectrum. So I'm loving that. Let's pick our stars. Rob, we'll start with you.
Sorry, can I just jump in there really quickly? I just wanted to say something. I have nowhere to say it, so I'm just going to say it out of nowhere because you mentioned Nia. I looked up Nia on Wikipedia, and I just thought it was weird that they don't know her age. I just thought that's strange. She was Miss America. Doesn't that competition like famously police ages supposed to police ages
mystery.
Closely in terms of making sure people are of legal age, but not too old. Yeah. There's like a narrow definition. So for somebody who's been through that process, it seems very strange to me that her age is not publicly known. I have nowhere to go with that. I just wanted to say that I found that weird.
I will say from firsthand account, my friend Mackenzie, who was also in the pageant circuit, knows Nia and says Nia is amazing. So, and I think what we're getting on this show is authentic Nia, and I like her and Danny. So that will be one of my stars, is their coupleship. Like, they're not in this episode a whole lot because they ain't got nothing to bring to this Kristen debate. And wow, Danny is a good father. Like, yeah. Unheard of with all of this group. And, well, Jason's probably going to be a good dad too. But I love that he's listening. Nia is explaining. They are working together, and that really was, for the little bit we got from them, a star moment for me. Another star for me is Jasmine, who had to put up with listening to all of these idiots yell and scream at each other during the dinner table, especially Jesse.
Yeah.
And my other star is going to have to be, and I'm sorry if I'm realizing I might be jumping in with my stars, and it's just what you get when you have Rob on the podcast.
I think that's where we are.
I think my last star is going to have to be when Kristen says the churro bites they order smell like the type of candle Brittany would burn in her house.
That was good. Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's low key a super insult. It's like, you're the person who's burning burning Christmas candles in July.
You're burning churros in your house.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Dylan, who are your stars?
First star is Kristen, no question. It's her episode. Beyond that, man, I don't know. Let's give a second star to Jesse for being such a prick that he's he adds something to the dynamic. Let's give a third star jointly to both of Michelle's parents for inoculating her against racism.
Yes, of course.
Totally. Yeah, I think number one star has to be Kristen for me as well. She's just like a complete mess this episode, and it pays dividends. I loved how she was like immediately throwing Zach under the bus when it gets brought up. Just great, great performance. Also want to point out, Kristen was like vague posting on her Instagram stories, and we got a clip of that. So I love that. The 2010 energy that is brought, because we didn't get much Joe in Vanderpump Rules. At least we got some vague booking.
I love that image of the post, because it's just a perfect Cohen that could mean anything about anybody. And yeah, I just love that being presented as evidence. And it's like, this is like designed in a lab to say nothing.
I feel like I need to create like a sub post account where it's like, this is the account you go to when you want to subtweet or sub story or vague post, like because I mean, it's a gold mine for all reality stars. They love doing that.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, my other star, Jesse, again, just like I said last episode, loving the fresh poison on the channel. He's so terrible, and it's amazing to watch. And then I think my last star will have to go to Jax. Just, we don't see a lot of him, but when we do see him, you can't take your eyes off of him. It's just like so refreshing to have him back on TV. So
much like that applicant's nipples, just can't take your eyes off him.
Yeah, 100%. Awesome. Well, this has been a blast. Rob, do you want to let everyone know where they can find you?
Yeah, the podcast is Vanderpump Robs, which is also the Instagram account. I'm also on TikTok. You can find it all there. If you really like my show, I would appreciate a Patreon subscription. You can sign up for free on Patreon, but anyone who does sign up at the Pump Teeny tier all through the month of April, and I may even extend it a little bit into May, get a free t-shirt. So I've got these Vanderpump Rob shirts in the style of 90s bootleg Bart t-shirts.
Oh, hell yeah. And I gotta see that.
So
I want one of those so bad.
Great quality, and it's yours. I'll even pay for the shipping if you sign up at the Pump Teeny tier at patreon.com/VanderpumpRobs. But of course, listen for free wherever you get your podcasts. And I really appreciate you both having me on. This has been a blast.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been a ton of fun. Dylan, do you want to let everyone know where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Substack writing very sporadically about movies. Dylan Ferguson is the name.
Yeah, I'm Craig Midwinter. You can just find me at Bravo Outsider on Instagram. Check out BravoOutsider.com. We post VR versions of our episodes. Also, subscribe to us on YouTube. Most importantly, just tell your friends about us. That helps us out a ton. Leave a rating and a review if you feel so inclined. Until next week, keep on wifing.